CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
And now, the list of things that you can buy at the Chicago Reader store at chicagoreader.com. Things to wear like Chicago Reader hats, t-shirts, bandanas, and face masks. Things for your daily life like the Chicago Reader camping mug, Chicago Reader tote bags, and a Chicago Reader reporter's notebook. Things for you to read like our Reader recipes, the Chicago Reader 420 Companion, our Chicago Reader Best Of book series from journalists Maya Duke-Masaba, Mike Sula, Ben Jarofsky, and Lior Galil, the Chicago Reader coloring book, and the Chicago Reader Stay Home puzzle. Find the Chicago Reader store at chicagoreader.com and show your support for the nation's first free weekly newspaper since 1971.
Bonus time of the Ben Jarofsky Show. As I speak, it is Monday, April 22nd, 2024. I've got a distinguished guest patiently waiting to come aboard, and I'll just give you what's a little sense of what's going on in the world today. We'll be talking about this throughout the upcoming week, Trump trial wraps up for the day. Wow, man. Donald Trump in New York City. His trial started today. This is the hush money trial where Trump paid hush money to Stormy Daniels to keep her quiet about their one night affair. The great Jerry Butler song. Shout out Jerry Butler. Anyway, this is the man you want to elect as president of the United States, MAGA. Wow. So that's what's going on in the world today. Without further ado, I'm going to ask my distinguished guest to introduce herself, and then we're going to have a topic that's kind of, sort of, related. Distinguished guest, introduce yourself.
Hi, my name is Megan Jaifo. I use she, her pronouns, and I am the executive director of the Chicago Abortion Fund.
Yes, very good. Thank you, Megan, for coming on my humble little podcast. Megan reminded me when I booked her for the podcast that she has actually been on the show once before. We recorded a conversation that the great Maya Duke-Masaba, Megan, and I had with TC, Terry Cosgrove, at the Hideout a couple years ago. Man, time flies. Yeah, that's not flying into the distance, baby. But many of the issues we were talking about then are still relevant today. And this is the issue of pro-choice. Now, I'm going to speak for myself. Megan, you can speak for yourself. If you disagree with anything I'm about to say, feel free to say that. I personally believe that abortion is a medical service that's absolute should be included in absolutely every insurance policy this country has. I definitely don't believe it is some atrocity. I don't believe it's a horror. I've never bought into the gaslighting of America that the far right and the zealots have put out about this. And I watch with dismay as so many Americans who I know actually agree with me on this subject feel compelled to go in the opposite direction, almost like they don't want to upset somebody. It's very strange and weird what we've allowed to do. I know our president of the United States from the last 4 years who put all these judges on the bench absolutely agrees with me on a personal level about abortion. And he just put these nutty judges on the bench to satisfy the evangelical zealots that have elected him. So it's just a very weird place we're in as America. And yet this issue, along with that, this is the connection, Megan. This issue, along with the various corruption trials and insurrection trial that Donald Trump is facing, may tip the balance and prevent the United States from having a fascist takeover after November's election. So I'll get off my soapbox with all that. Did I say anything, Megan, that with which you disagree?
No. Maybe I think I would, instead of categorizing this issue is one of choice. I think we need to move away from like the pro-choice language, and we need to move towards a pro-abortion framework where we're actually naming abortion for the, as you said at the top, the essential healthcare that it is. Abortion is common. 1 in 4 people in their lifetime in this country will have an abortion. Abortion is life-saving for so many medical reasons, but then it's also life-saving for social reasons. We know that when people are denied abortions, that they are more likely to have extreme financial challenges. They're more likely to go into debt. They're more likely, there's going to be specific impacts for the children that they do have. The majority of people who have abortions are parenting. So yeah, I think we need to get away from pro-choice or supporting women's reproductive health, and use actual, language. I think a lot of what we have, one of the ways we got to where we are is kind of seeding that the cultural power to the right too, like not actually having conversations about abortion in our communities. And I promise you, for the last 50 years where they worked really hard to undo Roe, they were having those conversations at their kitchen table and in their communities. And we need to be having conversations, not using euphemisms, being really clear about what abortion access is, what it means, what it doesn't mean, in order to try to gain some of these rights back. And we need more than rights too. We need more than legality. We need true access where all people who want to have abortions have the resources available to have them. So we have to say pro-abortion instead of pro-choice. And that includes our president, Joe Biden, needs to say pro-abortion, or the word abortion would just be nice too.
Has he ever said the word abortion, as far as you know?
A couple times, maybe two. And recently, a couple weeks ago, maybe two. There was a website, I had, actually.
Like
no.
You enumerated it. Maybe two. Like you remembered each instance.
I'm serious. There was actually a website stood up after his election, that the website was called Did Joe Biden Say Abortion Yet.com or something like that. So it was like, he has not said abortion. And I know recently he said, I'm not with that my body, my choice stuff. Something like that he did say recently. And it's like, Joe, like you said, this is what is probably, if anything is going to have you win, this is part of it. And you need to say the word. It's okay to say the word.
Well, I'm sure there's polling. I'm not making this up, Megan. I do not know that this is the case, but I'll bet you. So I'll frame it that way. I'll bet you, I'm a reformed gambler, that there has been polling done by Biden's political strategist. And by the way, probably the other side. As to what impact saying abortion as opposed to saying choice has on the all important swing voters in suburban Wisconsin, because they're the only ones.
Yes, but those voters are coming to the polls. But this is what's wrong with polling, right? It goes back to Donald Trump polling, where it was such a surprise to all of us that he won because people lie to pollsters. Abortion wins every single time it has been on the ballot since Dobbs. It has won every single time. And what people are maybe saying to a pollster about the word abortion is not how they're voting when they get to the ballot box.
Go into that a little bit. That's an interest. I've never heard that point before. We've talked many times in the show about people lying to pollsters and why they're lying, but I've never heard it to the specific issue. So,
this is my assumption. I'm not a pollster, obviously. I'm just an abortion funder.
This is the Megan theory, okay? all right. This is the Megan theory. All right. So, explain the Megan theory. This is, again, ladies and gentlemen, this is Megan's theory, all right? It's not a law yet.
I don't know if it's my, I have a sense that if your thought of, that Biden is not saying abortion because pollsters are telling him not to, that people lie to pollsters when the topic of abortion comes up, the same way they lied to pollsters when they were being asked if they were going to vote for Trump or not.
Okay.
Because so we know.
Go ahead.
Because abortion is so stigmatized. Abortion is a dirty word in our society. It has been completely separated from other, from the entire like healthcare's, from reproductive healthcare. It's on its own. That's why we have abortion clinics. What other common medical procedure has a whole separate brick and mortar framework? Abortion clinics. I mean, maybe you have like dialysis. I don't know. Like, but it's not, you know, it has been separated. We don't talk about it. We don't have conversations. We don't, you know, talk about abortion on the soccer field. We don't talk about abortion in our churches, even though, you know, 67% of Catholics are so-called pro-choice. And, you know, they're not talking about it at the archdiocese. All of these things. Or they're talking about it, but they're talking about it negatively. They're not talking about it honestly. They're not talking about it. The leadership of the church is not talking about it in the way that the people who are churchgoers are talking about it. We just don't talk about it. We are, and we don't understand abortion. We don't understand who has abortions. We don't understand what the impacts of denying someone an abortion is. We don't share our own abortion stories in our families. Or I think we're seeing that more now, right? Where people are sharing. I can't tell you how often when I tell people what I do, like out comes their abortion story that they've never shared with anyone else because it's so stigmatizing. These are people who move in very, you know, leftist or centrist spaces where it would ostensibly be okay to share that information, but it's so stigmatized and so politicized that people don't know when they can safely share that information, which means we just don't talk about it.
Yeah. Wow. And so as I'm understanding what you're saying, taking it to the next spot, as long as the Roe decision, which was made, what, 72 or 73, protected just the right to get an abortion, follow me in this, Megan, then people felt relatively free to pretend they didn't believe in the right of abortion. And so they felt free to vote for politicians who were denying many people the right to have an abortion. Many states limiting severely abortion rights in states throughout the country. But then when Dobbs, which was last year, right? Yeah, I lost track of time.
2 years ago. 2 years.
God, I have lost track. Whoa. 2022.
June 24th, 2 years ago, yeah.
Yes, I sit corrected. So when Dobbs came out eradicating Roe, suddenly people had to come face to face with the consequences of their own denial, the consequences of them, of their own, what, avoidance of this issue. And they said, we're going too far. We need to push back and we need to ratify as much as we can abortion rights. Is that your analysis as well?
I think so. Yeah. I think when you, in this country, historically, I guess when you assume a case goes all the way to the Supreme Court multiple times and is decided that it's done, right? Like people thought for a really long time that Roe was decided, that no Supreme Court justice would be able to overturn it. They invested, the movement itself invested in that as a strategy. Instead of expanding Roe, instead of going beyond Roe, it was just to protect it, to safeguard it, which again was leaving people behind, has literally been leaving people behind since its inception with the Hyde Amendment, which, you know, Henry Hyde here in our wonderful state of Illinois was the architect of, which denied Medicaid coverage for abortion care federally. That immediately left people behind. It immediately made sure that people who accessed Medicaid for their health care coverage were not able to use it for abortion care. Abortion funds would not exist if Roe was enough, right? We would not, we've been around for almost 40 years because people could not pay for their abortions, like, even though Illinois had robust legal protections and continues to have robust legal protections. We still serve a fair amount of people who are Illinois residents because even our laws don't make sure that there aren't people falling through the cracks when it comes to paying for an abortion and getting to one.
Yeah. The Hyde Amendment, we've talked about that in the show many times, not with you, but another conversation that I just wrote about this. So the Hyde Amendment, as Megan pointed out, was named for its chief sponsor, a congressman from DuPage County named Henry Hyde. Ladies and gentlemen, it's true. He's from Illinois. Henry Hyde said that he could not in good conscience allow his tax dollars to be used to fund abortions. It was such a horrific thing, and his conscience wouldn't allow him to do it. So follow me in this, ladies and gentlemen. The Democrats, I guess they had internal polling back then, said, I think what we'll do is we'll pretend like we buy into this. Like, yes, oh, it's just it's just too damaging to one's conscience to force them to pay taxes that would fund abortion. And so we will cut off public funding of abortion. Thus, Democrats abandon the principle that abortion is a medical service that should be entitled to all, whether they can afford it or not. All right. And acted as like it was some kind of evil thing that we're going to pretend doesn't exist. But if you got money, you can get one. This is why the abortion fund came around in the first place. Am I correct in my analysis, Megan? Go.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I think that there are still people who would call themselves pro-choice who don't think their tax dollars should pay for abortions. Even though their tax dollars pay for all other manner of health care, but we've pulled this one thing out.
Wow.
I think part of what our responsibility is, I think, for as people who care about this issue, is to be very clear about what who is impacted when someone is denied an abortion. And that's not just the individual who's denied an abortion. It is families, it's communities. When you're denied agency over your own body and how you decide whether to start or grow your family, something very real is taken away from you, and that impacts you, you know, for your entire life. And again, the majority of people who have abortions are parenting. So this is a family issue, and we need to frame it as such when we talk about abortion access, that, you know, parents know that they don't have resources in this country for the children that they do have. So we're going to force them to have more. Like, there's not, I can tell you that I have spoken to people on our hotline who would love to continue their pregnancies, but they don't have safe housing. They don't have good schools for their children. They don't have access to food. We don't provide the things you need in this country to raise a family. So how are we going to force people to add on to theirs? And we need to talk about that specifically, and name this as a family issue when we talk about it.
All right, and we'll get into the specifics. Let me just add this to you, Henry Hyde, amendment lovers. You know, I oppose on a local level for about 40 years of various expenditures and deals that our mayors have cut. I vehemently oppose the parking meter deal. So I believe I have a Henry Hyde Amendment right never to have to pay a parking meter for as long as I live, because I oppose this deal. It was done against my interest. I warned you, Chicago, what a stupid deal it was at the time.
I remember your warnings. I do remember that. Yes.
And they didn't listen to me, Megan. They still cut that deal. So you know what? I got a Henry Hyde Amendment right never to pay a parking meter. Let's see where that gets me with the judge and parking traffic court.
That's when you get booted and you're like,
booted, man. Henry Hyde stuff out of here, people. Cut it out. All right. You talk about the impact on just everybody when abortion rights are denied. Go into the specifics a little bit of what you're talking about.
Yeah. So we get a lot of information for our advocacy work from the Turn Away study, which was a first of its kind project that compared the lives of people who received a wanted abortion to people who were denied or turned away from getting their abortion. So this is very well-established research. I'm happy to share the website where you can learn more about it, but, compared to people who are denied the abortion they seek, people who receive a wanted abortion are healthier, they're more financially stable, they can raise children under more stable conditions, they are confident that their decision was right for them. So this is, you know, made up of interviews with people after they've either had or been denied an abortion for decades, and they're more likely to have a wanted child later. So those are things that we know from this study. I'm going to try to tell you a little bit more about the specifics, but of course I didn't have this pulled up. I can speak to my own experience having abortions. If I had not had abortions when I wanted them, my life would look quite different. And when you talk to, I talk to a lot of people who've had abortions. We have post-abortion community circles at the Chicago Abortion Fund. People who've had abortions know what they have meant for our lives. And I think being able to talk about our abortions publicly and without fear is a really important component of our movement work and making sure that people have the tools and resources that they're able to do so. But I'm going to give you some exact statistics. So women who were turned away and went on to give birth experienced an increase in household poverty lasting at least 4 years relative to those who had an abortion. Years after an abortion denial, women were more likely to not have enough money to cover basic living expenses like food, housing, and transportation. Being denied an abortion lowered a woman's credit score, increased a woman's amount of debt, and increased the number of negative public financial records, such as bankruptcies and evictions. Women who are turned away are more likely to stay in contact with a violent partner. They're also more likely to raise the resulting child alone. So those are just a few things that are like, you know, research has been done on this issue. And the results are kind of undeniable. It severely impacts a person's life and the life of their family.
And everything you just said, I believe that most people in this country know. No matter what they tell a pollster, no matter what they say to a microphone, no matter, they know that. They know that. And I believe that motivates. The first time I was aware of this was, I guess it would have the Kansas statewide referendum on abortion rights, which was post-Dobbs. So that's when I realized to the degree to which Americans had been gaslit on this issue, had been sort of pressured, as you put it, into pretending they believed one thing when they actually believed another thing. So voting for virulently anti-abortion zealots, putting the hands of government, putting the control of government in the hands of anti-abortion zealots, even though they disagreed with that. Do you follow what I'm saying? They'd been acting against what they believed in because of Roe. And then when Roe disappeared, they had to go, uh-uh. And that's what I believe we're in the state we're in now, politically speaking. So with Roe gone, there's pretty much, there's restrictive abortion laws in Arizona, Texas, I'm doing this off the top of my head, Mississippi, Florida. These are just a few of the states. I believe Ohio, Indiana. Oh my God. Missouri.
Kentucky.
So what?
Wisconsin.
Wisconsin. But didn't the judge rule? I can't remember what's going
yes,
on.
Yes, but Wisconsin has some clinics back open, but they were one of the first states to fall right after Dobbs. And something I think people need to understand, especially, you know, if we get into talking about this Florida ballot initiative, is my colleague at the Florida Abortion Florida Abortion Network, said is like abortion clinics don't get bailouts. So these clinics that are forced to close for a certain period of time while something cycles through the courts, they might not come back. And that leaves a gaping hole, right? Like abortion clinics are, you know, very small businesses in a sense. And if they are forced to shut their doors, I know I used to talk to someone at the EMW clinic in Louisville, Kentucky, and I used to talk to her regularly. We supported people going to that clinic for a long time. And I read in the news a couple months after Kentucky fell that like the whole clinic building has been sold. You know, it's done. Like everybody who went to work every day at that clinic, all the protesters who went there every day, like that clinic is no longer. And so when we think about Wisconsin, yes, it is now, there are providers operating in Wisconsin, but standing a clinic back up after it being closed is really hard. And then there's less appointment availability as a result, and which means people in huge droves from Wisconsin are still coming into Illinois every single day. And with Florida, on May 1st, we're going to lose access for thousands of people a month. And those clinics might not come back online when the ballot initiative, which I believe it will pass, gets implemented as early as January 1st. That's still a 9-month period-ish. Okay, I'm bad at math. 7-month period where people are not going to have a place to go. And then we just have to hope that those clinics can come back. So, I mean, the states that have low or restricted access that impact Illinois include Texas, Oklahoma, Alabama, Louisiana, Mississippi, Arkansas, Georgia, Florida, South Carolina, Tennessee, Kentucky, Indiana, and even Ohio, while they have legality now, they have some restrictions that mean that people are still traveling into Illinois.
Oh, all right. So let's talk about that. Tell folks exactly what it is that the abortion fund does and how is it impacted when a state like, let's say, Florida shuts down abortion clinics.
Yeah. So at the Chicago Abortion Fund, we provide financial, emotional, and logistical support to people seeking care with an individualized case management model. So that means people call us if they need support. They're typically referred to us by a clinic or a friend or the internet, and they reach out and we support them in accessing care at a clinic they've identified, or we help them identify a clinic. We pay for the appointment. We also support them with travel needs, logistical needs. So plane tickets, train tickets, gas money, rental cars. We do hotel stays, childcare support. We both pay for childcare. Support for kids at home. And then we offer in-person childcare support for people in the Chicago area traveling here. We provide meal stipends, support with medications, supplies, things like that. Really anything a person needs to get from point A to B. We also leverage the resources of other funding institutions so that folks who call us have a one-point contact. So they don't have to call, you know, they might be eligible. If I'm from Kentucky and I'm traveling to Illinois, I'm eligible for support from the Chicago Abortion Fund. I'm eligible support from the Kentucky Health Justice Network, which is a fund in Kentucky. And then I'm probably also eligible for national funding support. So at the Chicago Abortion Fund, we'll help you parse through all of those different funding sources so that we are the people figuring that out, not you dialing, you know, five different numbers for what kind of support you might be able to get access to. So that's our direct service model. We support between 200 and 300 people a week. That is a massive increase. In the year of 2018, we supported less than 200 people the entire calendar year. At the time of the Dobbs oral arguments, we had two full-time staff and two part-time staff. And now we have a full-time staff of 19. So a very massive, increase. And in addition to our direct service work, we've always recognized the role that we as abortion funders and people who've had abortions need to occupy in this like landscape for abortion access. And so we have a very unique position as both a service provider and an advocate. We have an incredible movement building director, Alicia, who I'm looking at, who leads our policy and advocacy work and our organizing work, and really the duality, direct service and advocacy, means that we're bringing real world experiences to the forefront of policy discussions here in Illinois and trying to get into those national conversations about what we need nationally for abortion access, because Illinois has long been a regional access point. For the last 2 years, we are a national access point for people seeking care.
Man, that is. Just underscores the point.
Let me give you a number, because we just pulled this number last week for a meeting. Since Roe fell, we have spent $6.5 million on direct service alone. So that's not our staffing. It's not, you know, it is nothing but abortion appointments, which is about $3.5 million, and the wraparound supports, which is about $3 million. And that's how much we've spent on getting people to the care that they want and need.
Wow, man, it's so deep. And where are the requests coming from? Which states?
I mean, every single state that I listed previously, those folks are coming to Illinois. We see the largest numbers from Indiana and Missouri, just as a result of our proximity. But then we also see really high numbers from Wisconsin, obviously, Kentucky, Tennessee, Arkansas, lots of people from Texas since SB 8, since that happened in September of 2021, a ton of people from Texas are traveling to this area. And with Florida, we know that Florida was serving a huge number of people from the Southeast in addition to supporting Floridians. So we will anticipate a very sharp increase in people traveling to Illinois as of May 1st. And the data that we look at for how abortions have increased post-Dobbs. Illinois was first in the highest number of abortion increases in our state, and Florida was second. So losing Florida is going to, it's a big blow nationally. And I think a lot of people were, I saw a lot of news about the Arizona ban. I saw less news about Florida, and Florida will impact us here in Illinois very deeply.
Yeah, as will Arizona, I'm sure. So I remember when the Texas law passed, and this was, the Texas law was passed before Dobbs. And one of the things that the Texas law did, it allowed residents to be vigilantes and go after women who left, or people who left the state of Texas to go to Illinois, doctors who directed them there, the, even like the cab driver who drove someone to an airport where they caught a plane to go to Illinois or New York or California or whatever. Have you seen any evidence of people trying to be those vigilantes since that law was passed?
We haven't. And I don't know if that's because I know of Texas abortion funds right after SB 8 kind of immediately stopped functioning in the way in providing direct service work. And I know that they are up and running again, and we collaborate with them pretty regularly. So I don't know if the national implications of Dobbs kind of overrode or what. I'm not really sure of the legality issue, but we certainly are supporting people from Texas all the time. And we've passed some protections in the state of Illinois. In January of last year, Governor Pritzker signed the Patient and Provider Protection Act, which was the first piece of pro-abortion legislation of that calendar year. We're hopeful that that will continue to protect the providers and the people coming here to Illinois. And then in the city of Chicago, we also have a bodily sanctuary ordinance. That means that like CPD cannot give information to vigilante prosecutor. They would be barred from sharing that information to protect patients and providers here.
Okay. So what I'm about to tell you is the absolute truth. I saw this and I've shared it with other people. I've not shared it with you. Maybe I'll do after the show. So there was a clip, very funny clip in some ways, but very scary clip in other ways. On what's that show? It used to be the Trevor Noah Show, but now it's
The Daily Show.
Yes, thank you for knowing that. Okay, and so it was a clip, very funny, and it talked about how Fox TV was framing the issue. In preparation for the political fallout, because one thing Republicans have learned, even MAGA has learned this, is that this is the one issue. I believe it's the only issue in the country, Megan, the only one that MAGA feels some necessity to address. They think they could just bowl over every other issue by just saying, you know, we love Donnie, Biden crime family, chaos at the border, we hate trans, whatever. Any other issue, you know, they could, but this is the one. Okay. This is the one. So they're in fact, they're like, they got their little MAGA brains working day and night. How can we come up? How can we concoct, a line, a political line that we could feed to the voters of this country? They have as low an estimation of the intelligence of voters of this country as Rahm Emanuel had toward you, Chicago. Okay? That's where they're at. Okay? So Rahm, I remember Rahm when he put the sweater on, this will convince them. And they all voted for him. That's how MAGA thinks of you, ladies and gentlemen.
I love your Rahm ire. I love it so much.
Man. That is so pathetic. Chicago reelected the guy. I'm madder at Chicago for reelecting him than I am for Rahm. Rahm is Rahm. Okay? You dummies reelected him. Anyway, sorry. I didn't mean to go on that tangent there. I cannot help myself. So MAGA is putting that little brain together. All right. How can we do this? And this is what they came up with. Megan, I am not making this up. I heard this from Fox people. They must get the memos from MAGA Central. MAGA Central going to Fox. Their line is that what's the big deal? People in Florida, people in Texas, it's still legal on Illinois. I get on a bus. I'm like, get on a bus. What the fuck?
So that's their new tactic?
Man, that's it. I got to say, Mag, Rom did better with the sweater than you, okay? So what's your response, all kidding aside, to what I think is utter idiocy of get on the bus? Go ahead, Megan.
I think it shows who they think they're talking to, right? They think they're talking to people of means and people with resources, and their constituents in many cases have neither, right? And are people who are calling abortion funds to get on that bus and on that plane. And I know that we support people who are what I would characterize as, you know, anti-abortion or anti-choice. And I think on like viscerally, I'm thinking about people we support that are driving, you know, 11 hours one way with the child in the car and showing up to a clinic and being turned away because they brought the child with them and a child can't go into a clinic. And the clinic calling Chicago Abortion Fund and saying, hey, can you come take care of this baby so that we can help their mom? And that is a common occurrence. Or people who are leaving their kids behind, losing jobs, spending their last dime to get, you know, on a plane or on a bus, you know, thinking about overnight bus rides, after a medical procedure, being incredibly uncomfortable. I mean, what we are having, what people are going through right now to get abortions, is barbaric. Like, it is truly barbaric what people are enduring. And that's just in the moment, right? It's not even, we're not even thinking about what effects that has on someone years down the road, kind of how they can internalize that. And I had a lot of difficulty having an abortion, and I internalized that as like, well, this probably wasn't the right thing to do. And I'm a terrible person. And I can't believe I had an abortion because it was so hard. And part of, I think, our role as abortion funders is to, you know, tell our callers, this is not hard because of you. It's hard. It's not hard because of the morality of this decision. It's not hard because you did something wrong. It's hard by design because there are politicians in this country and people in this country who want to restrict you from having autonomy over your own body and your own choices. But people, how can you believe, you know, us saying that when you went through hell to get your abortion? And that's like the easy abortions, right? So-called easy abortions, the ones that maybe you're coming all the way from Texas to pick up some pills that if you live in Illinois, you can have overnighted to you after a telehealth visit. You're flying up here, you know, all of that to just get some pills to go back home. That's hard enough. When we think about people who have complex medical needs, who maybe are in our CARLA program, which is our Complex Abortion Regional Line for Access program, stood up by the state of Illinois, UI Health, U Chicago, Northwestern, and Rush University, that helps connect people who need hospital-based care in Chicago to hospital-based providers. And I don't know like how I can overstate how traumatic it is to have to have a situation where you get all the way here from, I'll just say Memphis, because that's very common. You come from Memphis, you think you're going to go to a freestanding clinic, have a procedural abortion on, you know, a Thursday and head back home on Friday. And then you get to that freestanding clinic and you're told, we actually can't see you today. You have a medical need that requires you to be seen in the hospital. And prior to the CARLA program, those patients would be freaking out, calling us. We'd be calling various area hospitals to try to get them into the hospital quickly, time sensitively. And it wasn't working. And now we have this amazing program that connects them to nurse patient navigators at these hospitals who can get them in quickly. That hospital-based care can cost up to $10,000 in some instances for one person. And Chicago Abortion Fund pays for it. So that takes care of that. And we also support people with all of the wraparound supports they need. But how many people don't know that that exists or don't have access to that, right? That's a very unique program here in the city of Chicago. And so, yeah, I just think people need to understand like what we're doing what is the status quo right now? I don't know. I know this issue is not at the top of mind for people as it was, you know, 2 years ago when the leak happened or when Dobbs fell, but I think it's something everybody needs to make sure we're keeping our eye on, because it's going to get worse before it gets better. This is going to be decades. This is not going away.
You know, it's funny, that last line, I'm going to push back on it. I'm really absorbing what you just said. It's not on the top of people's minds. And initially I thought like you did. I thought in terms of news cycles, because this is a confession, Megan, I obsessively follow the news a little too much. You know, I'm using Megan as my therapist here, probably too much. I should back away and not read, obsessed. Like, I literally checked out what was on the Washington Post before we began this conversation. But I think this is, I'm starting to think that this particular issue has a greater, I don't know, how do I put this, like, metaphorical connection to people. It relates to a principle and about where people, where our country is heading. I as soon as I say this, I always think, oh, Ben, you're naive. No one thinks this way. So I'm like battling this idea as it's coming, emerging from my brain. But I see it in, like, oh my God, election after election in swing.
So this is it. But that's what it is. It is the elections. Politically, it is important. Politically, when Florida had the news that the double whammy in one day, which they did that by design, no abortion starting May 1st, but there's going to be a ballot initiative. We had glee. In our movement, glee, and all of Florida's in play. Florida's going to have a ballot initiative. People are going to turn out in Florida. That's on the backs of people in Florida and people in the Southeast, primarily low-income people, people of color, young people, immigrants and refugees, right? Those are the people who are not going to be able to have abortion care while they figure out the ballot initiative and getting that passed. I'm sure there is money pouring into Florida right now to get that ballot initiative passed, to get people out to vote. Is there money pouring into the Florida abortion funds who are going to help people get out of that state? No, there's not. Is there money pouring into the Chicago abortion fund to help people who are going to have to be so-called healthcare refugees in Illinois? No, there's not. So that, yes, politically, I think it is top of mind for people. The impacts and who it actually impacts is not top of mind for people.
Wow, that is true. That's a good riff, Megan. That is so true. What you said is so true, man. It gets to the heart of the Hyde Amendment, that same basic principle. People want the idea that abortions should be available, but they've conceded the notion that only people of means can get them.
That's right.
That was a huge concession that the Democrats and moderate Republicans, in those days, this is way before your time, mm-hmm. Megan, they were actually moderate Republicans who believed, I'm not making this up, this is true, you go back and read it. But that was a huge concession they made. And as a country, we're still facing the consequences, because the reality is that people who vehemently oppose abortion are just using the Hyde Amendment to gain a foothold. And man, all you dummies think that they're going to stop if Trump wins in November and they take control of the Senate, the House, you actually think? Oh my God.
Yeah.
Voters, you actually think they're going to stop? You believe them? I'm sorry, Megan.
No, I know. It's scary times.
It is scary times. Why don't we close?
But this is also, this is a public health crisis. And to me, the federal government's response should have been much more robust initially and should be more robust now. We are literally in a public health crisis. But because it only impacts women and trans and gender nonconforming people and people of color and low income people and young people, and where is the federal response? Why is not every lever of government figuring out what to do? You know, why are... It's just we can't do anything. We can't pass this and we can't pass that and we can't do this. And give me Biden saying, elect Democrats and I'll be able to get things done. You couldn't get things done. You guys could never get things done, or we would have more than Roe. Like, I don't know. They haven't done enough.
That's where we're at. There's only so far on any issue. We're talking about abortion rights right now, but we're doing climate change. We could talk about that issue. There's only so far the Democratic Party will go on any issue. They meet the resistance. They start worrying about the swing voters in suburban Wisconsin. I just made that up.
You're probably right.
It could be suburban Virginia. It could be suburban Maryland. Just think of suburban Illinois, Chicago, where they get their news from the Tribune. Oh, I read it in the Tribune. So let's close by, if folks want to help, how do they get in touch with the Chicago Abortion Fund? The floor is yours, Megan.
Yeah, so we're at a really exciting time right now. We're in the midst of our largest peer-to-peer fundraiser. It's called the Fundathon. So any person who is passionate about this issue can sign up on our website, chicagoabortionfund.org, and you can actually fundraise as a team or as an individual for direct service to support people getting abortions in Illinois. This is not only great for fundraising. We obviously need the money. Again, 6.5 million since Dobbs, and the numbers are going to keep going up. So we need to, and let me tell you, the donations have certainly dried up. So we need people to fundraise, but also we give you a toolkit and really robust support to also just have conversations about abortion in your community. So let's say you ask someone to donate and they don't have any money, but you've been able to share with them why abortion access is important to you. And you've started that conversation with someone in your life. And to us, this fundathon is just as much about building our movement and building power together as it is about fundraising. It's free to sign up. We have lots of supports. We're going to have a culminating event in May at Haymarket House on the north side. We do weekly meetups. We have team captain nights. My daughter is doing a bake sale in front of the Silver Room on May 4th. So if you want to hang out with us and buy some cookies in Hyde Park on May 4th or have a bake sale of your own, you can find all that information at chicagoabortionfund.org. We also have our post-abortion community circles. If you've had an abortion and you want to be with other like-minded folks and share your story, we do that every month. And we're just always looking for people to join our movement. And so there's resources on how to get involved on our website.
All right. Very good. Thank you very much, Megan. Appreciate taking the time to come on my humble little podcast.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
All right. That's Megan Jafo. I'm Ben Jarofsky. Take care, everybody.